What value and what someone values may be totally different than what somebody else values. My dad was a coin collector, and every time he got a load of coins, he would go through them and he'd look at each one of them. I turn around, I got a load of coins, I put them in my pocket. Every time he got a bill in his hands, he'd go through it and check it and make sure, and eventually go in his wallet. But whatever bills I got, it went right there because he was a coin collector, and he looked at every coin I think had ever passed through his hands. That's not my value. That's not who I am. And values are things that people hold on to. For example, my idea of family values is totally different than the person who is sexually confused person would have. My concept of Christian worldview would be totally different than that of an artist would have or an atheist would have. How you value your time is totally different than the way a neurosurgeon would value their time. And we all have different values. And let me help you with the definition of that word value. You know, it's a real academic definition. Here it is. Values are what you think's important. That's not really the academic definition, but that's really what it means. What it means. It comes down to value is what is important to me. Once you figure out what's important in life, that leads you to what the ought to's and should's. And what I mean by those are this. I think this is important, therefore I ought to. This has value to me, so I should. See those work in there? Let me explain it this way. As an American value, I think all of us as Americans have a value of freedom. I think it's just kind of hardwired in our DNA as we grow up in America, we value freedom. And that's just hardwired there. It's in the DNA of America. But I'm told, or I understand, that freedom is a value. I believe we should not, for example, enslave others. That's a value. Believe that we should not, all people should be created equal. That's a value. Therefore, I believe people should not discriminate toward anyone based on age, sex, or race. That's a value. Understand that we all have values. And if I went down the road just asking you, what's your value? Most of you would go, I don't know. Because we don't think about that. But let me tell you a little secret. We all have values. And when you have two values, then you have another problem. It's called, which one's more important? Yeah. Let me illustrate it this way. If I believe I have the right to speech, that's an American value. It's great. It's wonderful. But I just heard recently that Prince Harry was saying that the Americans' right to speech is stupid. They don't have that in Germany. They don't have that in England. They don't have that in France. Did you know that? We're the only ones that have that. And sometimes it gets us into trouble, but I also believe that while you have the right to speak, you also have the value of self-control. Something shouldn't be said publicly. You may have the right to, but maybe you shouldn't say publicly. Self-expression or self-control? Although your life would be based on, faced with a determining of what's important for you and what's more important for you, Jesus said this in Matthew 7:13. Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction. For many enter through it, but small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life. And only a few find it. Everyone has values. We live by them every day. We don't even realize it. And if I were to tell you what your values were or ask you about that, you would maybe have no idea, but I'll tell you a little secret. I could find out what your values are by watching you. Your values are reflected by your life. Jesus said this way in Matthew 6. He said, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The treasure he is speaking about is more than your money. It's also your time, your thoughts, your presence, your efforts, your priorities, your actions, your speech. All these things combine to come up with your value. What would someone conclude about your values if I followed you around for 3 or 4 days and saw what you paid for, where you went, what you spent your time on, what you spent your energy on? It's how you live your life. You see, it's not what you say you are. It's not what you think you are. It's not what you hope you are. It's how you live your life. It's also reflect on how we prioritize our values. Those of you who are not retired, you get up, you go to work, you have to pay the taxes, you got to pay for food, you got to pay for life, you're taking care of your family, that's a value. You put a high value on taking care of your family, that's what's important. But so is your family. Your family's important. What about these two values? You got work and you got family, and should you stay home from work to be with your family? Should you go to work to be able to take care of your family? You see how you have some kind of conflict sometimes with values? And if your child comes home from school, you say, by the way, sometimes we commune our values by the way we ask questions. Your child comes home from school and they ask had a test that day, and what's the first question you ask? Did you get an A on the test? Did you get a good grade on the test? Did you do your best? You see, they're picking up their values based on your questions. Let me give you another one. This will be really interesting. You don't have to shout out an answer. You're at work and your spouse calls you to tell you they had an accident on the way home. What's the first question you ask? How was the car? Number two, was it your fault? Number three, are you okay? I want you to speak out because some of you, when I did the first one, you're going, they're like, I don't know. The whole thing is that it reflects your values. Do you understand how that works? It reflects what's important to you. One of the most well-known value statements that Jesus ever shared was this one. What good will it be for a man if he gains the whole world yet forfeits his soul? Or what can a man give in exchange for his soul? I'm going to break this down for you. Gaining the world's okay. You know, gaining the world, you know, it's money, power, respect. They sound important. And there's nothing intrinsically wrong with these things. There's nothing wrong with gaining money. There's nothing wrong with having respect. Nothing wrong with having authority. Nothing wrong with any of those things individually. Nothing, none of them. But are they worth your soul? That's really the question. These things individually are okay, but are they worth your soul? The soul is your highest priority. What value will you place on that? Now, some of you are wondering, preacher, when are you going to get to the sermon? It's like a philosophy class. What are we doing here today? Well, I felt I really needed to lay a foundation for this text. I have preached on this text many times here. But I've always come away feeling, I don't think they get it. You ever done that before, trying to explain something maybe to your kids or somebody, a friend, a neighbor, and you try to explain it to them and you walk away and you think, they didn't get it. And I have many times felt that way when I've preached on this scripture. And so it's not a new scripture to preach on. It's not a new topic to talk about. But I've always felt like maybe I needed to lay a greater base for this study so other people could understand. You know, we're trying to say lots of things are important, but some things are more important than others. Let's flip over to Luke 10. See if we can dig in there. Luke 10 in your Bibles. Jesus is on a journey here with his disciples around Israel. And the disciples come to a house of Jesus' friend Lazarus. Now we know him because just a couple chapters before, Jesus raised him from the dead. He's a somewhat wealthy man, lives close. He's in Bethany, lives close to Jerusalem, a man in some reputation. And he had died. Jesus was away. Jesus came back, brought him back from the dead. And here they are again traveling in this area. Excuse me. And he decided he's going to stay at my friend Lazarus' house. Okay, let's get to the scripture. We've talked about this before here. Luke 10, verse 37. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister named Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he had said. Let me just pause there. This is Lazarus' home, but Martha, being the oldest sister, it's kind of like she's the woman of the house. And she's the one who would welcome guests and make things ready for guests. And she was kind of in charge of that. Mary was the younger sister. I don't know how much younger old enough clearly to work and help with food and help around the house, so she wasn't a child, she was an adult. Jesus comes in and begins teaching. He's got the disciples with him. Mary is fascinated by what he's saying, and so she just pauses and just listens to what he said. You know, what an opportunity, you know? I'm going to get to sit and listen to Jesus. I just want to sit and listen and be a little mouse in a corner. I'm not going to say a word. I just want to hear what he has to say. And maybe he'll say something that will change my life. Here's the picture. This family knew Jesus, and they were honored to have him. And as a custom, they would prepare to host them and prepare a large meal as a welcoming. That was just a tradition thing that they would do. So Mary and Martha got working. Like all y'all women, y'all know, when you're going to have company, get the dust cloth out, get the scratcher out, get the run the vacuum cleaner. Don't stand there. I just vacuumed there. And start to sit. Don't sit there. I just cleaned that. You all know what I'm talking about, right? All right. Okay. Because it isn't new. It isn't new. And Mary and Martha are doing that, you know, doing the kamikaze clean. And so they're all over the house, and they're doing the bathrooms, and they're, you know, they're cleaning this and cleaning that, and getting out the good plates and getting out the, and they're just working. And Martha, you know, she is a homemaker. She's a boss, and she's doing this, and she stops and looks in, and then there's Jesus talking, and there's Mary just sitting there. And she blew her top. She blew her top. Let's keep reading. But Martha was distracted. I want you to remember that word because I'm going to tell you what it really means in the Greek. She was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. You had to make preparations. You got a guest coming, you have to make preparations. They get the good stuff. You know, you put out the towels in the bathroom that nobody uses. You know what I'm talking about? You put out the good soap that's got the flowers in it and everything, and your hand towels, you know, that nobody ever uses, you know. Guys, if you go in there, you might use the soap. When you come out, you're doing this. Because you know, don't use that hand towel. You know. I know. I've been married 45 years. I know. So she's running around doing all those little things behind the scenes. Nobody cares. They're not needed. They're not needed. But she thinks they are. She comes to him, Jesus, and asks, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Now, if she had just stopped there, I think Jesus would have given an answer, an easy answer. He'd have said, nope. I really do. If she had just said, don't you care about, like, nope, because you're making all this work for yourself, not for me. You're worried about making your house look good. You're worried about being thought of as a good housekeeper. You're worried about being thought of as a good cook. You're not doing this for me. You're doing it for you. So, nope, I don't care. But she went on and she said, tell her to help me. I don't think Jesus liked being told what to do. You know, I might tell a suggestion to somebody, but I'm talking to the, you know, creator of the world in the form of Jesus, and I don't think he's used to being told what to do. Let me go back to a word, that distracted word. It means caught up with or preoccupied. It doesn't mean that Martha didn't disrespect Jesus. But what she was saying is, listen, Lord, appreciate all your teachings. You're real smart. You're good. But today, somebody's got to clean and shop and cook and serve, and you know, the important stuff. So if you really want to help, tell my lazy sister to get off her rear and help me. We read this and understand that Martha is saying, it's kind of shocking. She's talking to Jesus. And she's being kind of rude. But it's Jesus. But if we're going to be honest, let's be honest. I like honest. We do the same thing. Jesus, I know it's really important to pray, but I've just really got a lot of things to get done today and get off my desk, so I just don't have time. Really? Jesus, I understand it's Sunday, and I got some company that just came in, so I can't get to church. No, I didn't ask them. They're adults. They'd be okay by themselves. But I just can't leave them. I mean, or it's a beautiful day, Jesus. Surely I can just worship you on the golf course. That's just like Martha. That is. Basically, it's saying what I'm doing is really more important than what you want me to do and spending time and attention on you. So let me straighten you out, Jesus. That's kind of what we're doing when we do that. Let me straighten you out. Here's Jesus' response. It's like texting. We can't really tell what people are thinking usually. That's why they came up with emojis. We can't tell. But I'm going to read this. Martha, Martha, sad face emoji. Sad face emoji. You are worried and upset. Hair burning emoji. About many things. Might want to underline that word worried. It means stressed out. You ever been stressed out, worried? A lot of people think when you hear worried, you think like, oh, I don't trust God, I'm worried. No. The word itself means stressed out. We've all been there. But Jesus goes on and says, but a few things are needed, or needed only one. Mary has chosen what is better. Thumbs up, emoji. And it will not be taken away, mean face, from her heart. You see how, you know, when you just hear the words, you don't really, but Jesus is just trying to be nice about it, but he's really being pretty firm. I will not take this from her. No. I won't stop Martha. Mary, no. And I just wonder what Martha's face looked like, you know. What she had to be, no. He said, no. She's got to deal with it. Think about this. Martha was stressing out about cooking dinner for Jesus, okay? Now, Jesus had just fed 5,000 people on a hillside. Do you think he was worried about lunch? You see, when you put it in those perspectives, it's different, isn't it? And we've done this story 1,000 times, but I've just never really got the whole picture. But Jesus has fed 5,000 people. Here's a handful of people in the house. And I don't think he's really worried about it. I think it's more important. He looks and says, isn't that wonderful? Mary's getting it. She's listening. She's right here. That's great. Let me remind you of the words of martyred missionary Jim Elliot. Died while trying to reach an indigenous tribe. He is no fool to trade what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. Reality is that we can't keep our lives, our money, our youth, our kids, our health, our careers. We don't get to hold on to those because, you're all going to die. I think some of you just found out maybe for the first time because you haven't been living like you know that. See, we're on this time on earth like, you know, this postage stamp on the head of the flagpole on the timeline. That postage stamp's depth, that's us now. Flagpole, whoa, it's even a far cry from really saying what eternity's about. But we worry about this, not that. We're all going to pass away. 100% chance you're all going to die. When that time comes, wouldn't you trade all the things you valued in your life to be with Jesus in eternity? Everything you own, you would trade. Let's head this horse toward the barn. What we all want, everybody in this room, we all want the same thing. Now, we say it a different way, I think, but we all want an abundant life. We don't use that terminology a lot, but we all want, and that doesn't mean fabulously wealthy. It doesn't mean fabulously beautiful. It doesn't mean fabulously powerful. It's just abundant life, the things that you understand to be abundant in life. We don't want to come to an end of our life and look back and not think, my life was significant. I made a difference. I had an impact. My life meant something. I was happy. My life was whole. I lived an abundant life. I had an abundant life. We all want that. We don't want to look back in life and think it's full of indecisions and bad mistakes. Things you could have done, the things you should have done, the things you didn't do. That's the kind of life Jesus also wants us to have. Let me read from John 10:10. It's the King James Bible. I've come that they might have life, and they might have it more abundantly. That's why Jesus came. He wanted us to have an abundant life. Part of an abundant life is a relationship with him. How do you get to that point? How do you get to have an abundant life? Well, it all depends on what you value. If you believe an abundant life has to do with money, you will value money. You'll place it above everything else. It'll be a priority. And sadly, that money has never, never, ever brought happy, profound life. It's brought an important life, a flashy life, a lot of comfort. But at the end, somebody like me, a preacher, stands before them and talks about their abundant life, and they've got to talk about all kind of temporary, silly things like a movie or a this or a that, but I don't get to come in and say, this person changed lives. This person had an impact on the eternity of people I personally know. This person lived for Jesus. It's a whole lot of different kind of living life. If you believe in appearance and it's key to your abundant life, you place value on your looks and your health, and you might exercise and eat right, you'll dress carefully and keep up with the current styles, and you'll see the best cosmetics and beauty treatments. Paul said this to Timothy. He said, for physical training is of some value, but godliness has value for all things, holding promise for both the present life and the life to come. Look, none of those things I just mentioned are bad. You want to wear makeup? I don't care. Just don't do clown makeup, okay? Don't like clowns. But you need to find out what the priority is. Let's say your appearance is not the priority. You could be the best looking, absolutely fabulous body in the funeral home. You ever think of it that way? I mean, it's like you're cramming for something that you won't get to enjoy. They're all going to stand back. Boy, didn't he look good? Wasn't he? Man, oh, man. You know, he used to run all the time. He could bench press. He's great. Yeah. And she's beautiful. Even in death, she's a beautiful woman. Beautiful. Well, look at the dress. That's a fabulous. Wonder if that comes in my color. Now, some of you are thinking I can't be silly. I'm not being silly. I'm just telling you the truth. You know, you believe your kids, your family is the most important thing in your life, and you're a parent, and your kids are everything, and so you value your life around, you plan your life around, you wrap them up. In school, you do the Little League, cheerleading, baseball, dance, all kinds of curricular activity, extracurricular activities, but at some point, you're training them to do this, you know. Grow up, mature, graduate, go away, and eventually make a life of their own with a spouse and leave you behind. That's what you're training your kids to do. Because you know it's healthy for them to get a life of their own, to have somebody live their life with. So if you plan your whole life around kids, let me just tell you, in ministry as many years, I mean, nearly 50 years, I've seen so many families who were the model parents. I mean, they were in the PTA, you know, they bought in the cupcakes for birthdays, and they did all the things with the kids. Their kids were in dance and tap and baseball and summer baseball and travel baseball and this and that. And they would go to every game, and they were just wonderful people, but they lived their life for their children. And I see them years later when their kids have gone away to college and got a job and got married, and now there's grandkids someplace up north. And now they're by themselves. And they're thinking, all my life I poured it out for my kids. And they're gone. I made some wrong choices, maybe. The world would have us put culture as a value, movies as a value, friends as a value, and all those have different values. You see, you can't get to where you want to get an abundant life if you're not following the wrong plan. Or if you're following the wrong plans. I got a pretty good sense of direction for the most part. And like all men, I hate to ask for directions. So many years ago, we were in Las Vegas. Linda and I were in Las Vegas together to see her sister. Her sister's a singer, and I think she was traveling with Wayne Newton then or somebody. And so we were going to go and crash at her place and flew into the airport. And I didn't have, this is before GPS, folks. There was life before GPS. It's called maps. Okay? We know. You know, your kids find, what, Dad, what's this? Is this a treasure map? No, it's a trap to Colorado. So anyway, I went to the rental kennel, got my car, and I was leaving. I said, could I get a map? And he's talking to somebody else, and he reaches down and he's here. So I'm like, oh, good. Okay, so we walk out to the car, we get in, get settled. I know where everything works and everything. So first thing you do when you're doing this, I